Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
This is Computer Talk with Tab, hosted by Eric Semmel of Tab Computer Systems. Interact by phone at 522-WTIC or 1-800-966-WTIC. You can email them in the studio at gethelp@tabinc.com or get help anytime at computertalkwithtab.com. Now, here's Eric.
And good morning. This is Computer Talk with Tab. I'm Eric.
And I'm Bob.
And Bob is Bob Shorey. He's one of the MCSCs that works at Tab, been with us over a decade. And he comes in and helps us out with your computer problems, comments, questions, and concerns, because I can't answer them all myself. Are you kidding me? Come on. Feel free to get online, 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC, and we'll do our best to help you out. This morning, we're here till 11 o'clock, so feel free to get online. So in the news, there's been some interesting stuff in the news lately, and one of the most recent things, you hear all the stuff on about Twitter and the Russian fake ads and all that fun stuff, and we'll talk about that in a second, but something really strange happened at this cloud company. Now, Twitter has everything in the cloud, right? And you send and communicate back and forth, and our president seems to love this medium, which is fine. I'm not making any commentary on that, whatever. The thing is, though... His account was deleted by a guy who was let go. That's all I'm going to say right now. This guy, the president, has more than 41 million followers. And just some dingling being let go at Twitter can delete that account. You know, that should give you tremendous pause for putting anything in the cloud. If Twitter can't do a two-factor that says, hey, guys, for folks who have this many followers, you know, we need to have at least somebody beyond just a, you know, regular guy having access to an account to allow it to be deleted. You need some sort of secondary verification. You know, I'm going to delete it, and then the guy above me is going to say, yes, confirmed, this account can be deleted. But no, not at Twitter. Of course not. It should give you tremendous pause.
Well, no company has disgruntled employees.
No, of course not.
That doesn't happen. Come on. I mean, and then they wouldn't.
They never do that.
Possibly want to do damage on their way out the door.
No, I mean, I'm sure your 365 account would never. That would never happen at Microsoft or any of the other companies out there. I mean, this is mind-boggling that a company like Twitter would allow this. But then again, it's not. If you look at Equifax, and you look at all these. You know, Deloitte has got all their information for all their customers out on an AWS server, wide open for everyone to see. This is what's going on, guys. There's not enough oversight. There's not enough security. There's not enough care. Just stick it in the cloud and hope for the best. And they got it back up in 11 minutes. I don't know how. I mean, Mr. Trump must obviously look at his Twitter feed constantly. I don't even care about Twitter, frankly. I got better things to do than to watch Twitter. But 41 million people are watching it, especially the news media. And they got it back up in 11 minutes. And this guy's obviously hailed as a hero because he was able to do this. So, again, Twitter, you're even more embarrassed by some guy you fired is now a hero. It just shouldn't happen. You'd think it'd be some sort of security in place. It just shouldn't happen. In other news, our own Senator Blumenthal, I saw this on CT Mirror and really got a chuckle out of it. Of course, he's talking of, you know, they're trying to figure out what's going on with the Russian ads and what's going on with the posts that are on Twitter, Facebook, all the fake ads, right, that Russia supposedly put on there. And Senator Blumenthal has an example from a comedian, Aziz Ansari. He was on Parks and Rec. My kids love that show. And his ad showed, save time, avoid the line, vote from home, tweet Clinton Kane with the hashtag presidential election on November 8th. Between 8 a.m. and 6 p.m. to cast your vote. So that's the example Blumenthal gave, is you know, fake news and, you know, the Russians hacking. And, guys, truly, I mean, you just think about our politicians in general and all the fake news they put out. If you look at even this recent budget debate here in Hartford, where certain actuarials of one party's side said the budget didn't add up. And then, of course, the unbiased actuarials of our government said this ad doesn't add up. These budgets, this is all numbers, right? It either is true or it's not true. And you're called actuarials, not sort-erarials or kind-erarials or maybe-erarials. For some reason, these two bodies of actuarials, of which we in Connecticut have the most actuarials per square foot of any state in the world, in the country, they couldn't come up with an agreement factuarially, on a budget number.
Well, aren't you glad they adopted GAAP accounting?
Well, there's that too. So I digress. If you want to talk about fake news, you can't even tell us the truth about numbers. And numbers don't lie, generally. So this is kind of funny. Of course, I've often joked on this program about the chemical dihydrogen monoxide in our water. Right? I mean, I've talked about it in an example that we really should be why. I'm surprised Senator Blumenthal has not jumped on this issue of dihydrogen monoxide in our water. It's definitely something to be worried about. But again, my example of dihydrogen monoxide, kind of tongue-in-cheek here, you figure it out yourself. Google it, you'll figure out what I'm talking about. Goes back to the point of, you know, someone thinking they could cast a vote via Twitter.
No fraud there.
It's not even fraud. I mean, come on, people. Is that a failure of our educational system if you really think that's going to sway an election and you think that somebody really doesn't understand how to vote? That Twitter is the means of voting?
Well, people vote on Twitter all the time, don't they? I don't know. I don't even have an account.
I don't know. I mean, you could have said just yell out your front door who you vote for. It would be the same thing. So Twitter and Facebook and all those folks are trying to explain why they took money from Russia Today. Twitter solicited Russia Today, which is a news organization in Russia, or you know, some type of news organization in Russia, the communist news organization, to post ads on Twitter. And then they banned the ads. And Russia Today spent $100,000. But Twitter was soliciting them. So these companies, you know, they are what they are. And if you want to start, you know, policing them, go ahead. But even in our own town of Southington, there's a sign up saying 31%. Higher. It's just some black and white sign. Nobody knows really what it means. And you could assume it means taxes have gone up 31%, or we don't know what it really means. So is that fake news? Is that something that Blumenthal would go after? Yard signs now? What does that mean? If it was a sign that said, tweet your vote on November 7th, would Blumenthal be all over it? I don't know that he would. Maybe we should try it. It's just crazy out there, guys. It's personal responsibility. If you're not a sharp enough tack to realize that you can't vote via Twitter, your vote deserves not to go anywhere as far as I'm concerned. But Mr. Blumenthal will save us from that, and thank goodness for it, right?
I just wish he would talk to Al Gore about how the internet works.
Well, clearly Al Gore designed it poorly. In other news, Google Docs, they locked out your stuff. Now, you probably saw this recently. They're trying to protect you. And back on Tuesday of this week, for about 6 hours, Google folks were finding that their docs were coded as being malicious. And it kind of creeped people out. They're like, hey, wait a minute. Is Google reading my doc? No. Come on. Google wouldn't read your doc, would they? They're probably not reading it. But they are saying that they have an algorithm or a tool that went rogue and thought that your term paper or the novel you were writing or whatever was you were writing in Google Docs was seen as a virus or malware, or had, here's the thing that got people creeped out, abusive content. Nobody can have abusive content on Google. Again, depending on what your point of view is, what is abusive content?
No censorship there.
No. You haven't done anything with that content. You're writing a book about whatever craziness you want to write about, and Google will save you from it. But this is, again, part of the issue of the cloud. All those folks had their tool was locked out. They could not use it because Google thought it was malicious.
Well, you know, we got to watch out for Skynet. No.
it was automated and instant. And everybody was affected, or most everybody was affected from what I can read in this article. We'll put a link up here for you. Take a look at it. But it's, again, back to the cloud. I mean, if you wanted to type whatever you wanted to type in your own privacy of your own home with the old-fashioned typewriter, there was no thing that said whether or not it was malicious content. You know, you could write your thoughts and ideas. The thing about being an American and having your own thoughts and ideas could be put down on paper without some all-knowing system telling you whether or not it was abusive content that you were writing. And if it was writing against the British and their taxes, that would have been considered back then abusive content.
So we got artificial intelligence being the thought police.
Scary stuff. So we'll put that up there for you to take a look at. Anything else you wanted to bring up, Bob? Kind of monopoly. I think you had a Tesla article that I thought was interesting.
Yeah, I have a Tesla. They can't ramp up their Model 3 production until 2018 now.
But that was due out this fall, wasn't it?
Well, yeah. But they only got 222 out, and they were supposed to get out 1,500.
Oopsie.
So, yeah, and they took a $671 million loss.
Oh, boy.
In the third quarter, mm-hmm. which is 76% of what it lost in all of 2016.
Oh, boy, that's a big loss.
So it's big, yeah. And, yeah, their stock prices are down. And,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I can see that they're struggling.
There was a conference call that I saw. What's his name there? Elon Musk was in. He called himself, he said that he was in the eighth level of hell. And there's only nine levels, I guess.
Yeah, I read that too.
They can't figure out how to automate the production of the Tesla, and they're doing a lot of it manually. They fired also a ton of people recently. They said it was due to poor performance, but a lot of them were just let go just recently, a big chunk of them.
So deliveries of their other sedans and their Model X and the Model S, they went down from 25% in the second quarter of 2017 mm-hmm. to 18.7% in quarter three.
Right, and they're still fighting with Consumer Reports. Consumer Reports, I saw this on, I think it was on NBC 30. They were listing all the best models of cars that were out there. And, of course, Honda and Toyota, Lexus were at the top. And the Tesla Model X was at the very bottom. And, of course, they're fighting about that as far as that goes. There's a lot going on.
They also experienced a slowdown in their ZEV credit sales. And what ZEV is, in case you don't know, is that
I don't know.
Zero emissions vehicle right. credits. So they get credits from the government.
Subsidies.
For producing zero emissions vehicles.
Yes.
Okay. So what they do is they sell, it's like the carbon credit
mm-hmm.
market. So they sell these credits to other manufacturers who don't make enough zero emissions vehicles.
And now the other
manufacturers. So that they'll be compliant and won't get fined.
But the other manufacturers are starting to do that, and that means the sale of those credits is lower.
Correct.
Because
they're jumping on the electric bandwagon. Because you can get a plug-in Prius now. You know, you got the Chevy Volt, and they have other models.
Chevy Volt's actually doing very well. The thing is, though, I find it completely, just utterly disgusting that our government is subsidizing a $70,000 or $80,000 or $100,000 car. Excuse me. That's insanity, and this just slaps us all in the face. I mean, who can afford? I mean, if you can afford it, wonderful. Please go buy it. I applaud you. Go ahead and buy a $100,000 vehicle. But I shouldn't be giving you $7,500 of tax money to make it a little cheaper for you.
But if I get enough billions of dollars from the government to subsidize a business that loses money, I can take some of this money and give it back to the politicians who will encourage me to spend more taxpayer money.
Oh, is that how it works, Bob? You might be right. So that's interesting. We'll see how Tesla does with their Model 3. But it's the $35,000 base model, I think, doesn't even come with power seats or even, you know, none of the basics you'd find in a basic $35,000 vehicle.
It probably has rubber mats instead of carpets.
So, I don't know. We wish Tesla best. We're not haters, but my goodness, I just find it disgusting to subsidize vehicles at those levels. I mean, no one's subsidizing somebody's $100,000 Porsche. I mean, I'm sure they would love it. I mean, if you're going to get $7,500 back on your Porsche, whatever it might be, enjoy. But just because you made an electric vehicle doesn't mean we should subsidize to that level. If you want to subsidize a $15,000 car to get people into it, that I can get behind, I guess. Maybe. I'm not a big guy in government subsidies.
I think that they could make cars a lot less expensive. You know, I want to buy a pickup truck. Okay. Yeah. And I can't find one that doesn't have four doors, huge crew cab, and only a 5-foot bed.
Right. You have plenty of place to sit, but nothing, no room to haul anything.
I don't want to carry 6 people in my truck.
You want to hear, you want to carry a load of manure in the back,
me,
or whatever it might
be.
Me
and my wife. Right. And I want an 8-foot bed so I can carry plywood from Home Depot. And don't you from the dealer tell me, well, just lower the bed, the tailgate. Well, that still doesn't get me 8 feet, and it doesn't keep my load from sliding off onto the road.
Ah, things are changing. We're going to step out for a quick break. Get back to more of your calls. We got 4 lines that are all filled up. So John, Cassie, Karen, and Rocky, hang on. We'll be right back. And we are back. This is Computer Talk with Tab. We're going to be here till 11 o'clock. And we'll do our best to help you with your computer problems, comments, questions, and concerns. And I saw the lines for folks sitting out waiting for their iPhone X, their $1,100 phone sitting out there in the mall. It's a little, the news, I'm sorry I'm laughing, but the news was interviewing these folks, and they're all blurry-eyed. I'm sorry. It tickles me, though, because what did they say that they're looking for? This guy had a brand new 7, roughly a 6-month-old, however old 7, it's a day-and-a-half-old iPhone 7. And he goes, yeah, the iPhone X has it's a clearer screen. It's a little lighter, a little faster.
It's got 2 batteries in it.
Ooh. Oh, God. I mean, guys, really? It's the colors pop more. Keep telling yourself that, buddy. So you're going to buy an $1,100 phone. I would. It's almost like, you know, the difference between wines, right? People talk about this. If you've got these wine connoisseurs, I'm not trying to upset all the wine connoisseurs out there, but if you put, you know, a $300 bottle of wine and a $22 box bottle of wine, you pour the glasses and you have people drink them, after the first glass, they're all tasting the same. It's just, I'm sorry. It's as simple as that. I mean, it might make you feel better that you, or maybe you just are cooler that you could afford a $300 bottle of wine, and more power to you. Again, more power to you.
See, but my problem is that I only drink the one glass.
Yeah. When you tell me it's got this fruity tannin of this and that, good for you, man, but it's just a bottle of wine. All right, let's go on. It's a little brighter. It's a little lighter. The colors pop. Let's go on to John and Winston. Hey, John, how are you? John, you there? Uh-oh. John, you there? You can hear somebody breathing. Oh, poor John.
Must be listening to the radio.
He might be. I'll move on to Casey next, and I'll put John back on hold. You there, Casey and Danbury? Cassie?
Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good. What can we do for you?
Well, I've recently joined a class, and I'm trying to learn how to budget better.
Budget better, okay.
Yes, budget.
Mm-hmm.
So they suggested we do either the envelope method or go on to online and find a good app. And I decided to try You Need a Budget app.
All right.
But they want to connect to my bank account.
Creepy, huh?
And, yeah, especially after this Twitter thing, I'm thinking, really?
I'm glad you're thinking that way.
I wonder what your thoughts were on it.
I wouldn't do it.
Heard of this app?
I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it. I would not connect any app to my bank account that allows for a connection that allows a company to move money in and out of my bank account. Period. Heck, I don't even like my bank's apps.
They say they're not going to touch it. What they want to do is access my spending habits.
Oh, isn't that nice of them? Couldn't you just tell them what your spending habits are?
Yeah, that's what I figured.
Yeah, it's a little creepy,
okay,
Cassie.
Yeah, creepy. I got a red flag on it, so it's a well-known app, but
yeah.
I'm leery. So.
Well, I can tell you right now, you want to know what our budgeting method is? The envelope method. We write those checks. It makes us angry every time. Every time you write the check, you realize what you're spending. And my goodness, it can definitely affect your spending when you write the check.
Okay.
All right?
Yeah, thanks a lot.
You got it, Denver.
I appreciate your opinion.
All right.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah,
bye.
Bye-bye. All right, guys, we're going to be here till 11 o'clock. Feel free to get online, 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. We'll be right back. And And we are back. This is Computer Talk with Tab. We're going to be at 11 o'clock. The lines are all jammed up. Thank you for calling us on this Saturday morning. It gives us something to do. Otherwise, Bob and I will be talking about our kids. And let's go to your calls. I'll try John at Winstead one more time, see if he's with us. You there, John? John, you there? No, I'm going to assume John's not there. I'll drop that and move on to Grand Rapids, Michigan, in Rocky. Hey, Rocky, what's going on in Michigan?
Well, we're having a nice fall day, 40 degrees.
Nice.
And nothing white on the ground yet.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, yeah. So I called because of a caller from last week or the week before, pretty recently, was trying to get some particular television programming. And I was felt a little tortured listening to the way he wanted to go about it, because it sounded like he mostly wanted one thing, which was a television series.
Yeah.
In particular, it's one that I follow closely. And just wanted to bring back into everybody's consciousness that there's a free and effective solution to his need, and that local library, free DVDs. in our area, we can get all seven seasons he was looking for, plus the sequel, from our public library system in Grand Rapids. I was checking the Hartford this morning, mm-hmm. and the first two seasons are definitely available.
Yeah.
So if he can have access to Hartford Public Library or even another one,
right,
then he didn't have to go through all the hoops of trying to sign up for this and that and pay $30 a month. Or
find himself on the dark web or who knows where he's going to go. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, the old-fashioned library.
So I'm sure everybody's kind of subtly aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm almost embarrassed to bring it up, but
no, you should bring it up.
I listened to the conversation. I was thinking, oh man, he wants to rub his tummy and tap his head, and pretty soon he's flying a helicopter.
Yeah, no, low tech is a good thing, man. It always works. CDs work really well.
Price is right, and it's very effective. Yeah. And in some ways, it's more convenient because you're just controlling your DVD player.
Yep.
Right there yourself. You can pause it and get a sandwich anytime you want. You don't have to worry about anything.
Yeah, no, it's a good point, Rocky. Thanks for bringing it up.
So
it's an easy way to get
the series was The Closer, and the sequel is called Major Crimes. And like I say, every single one of those was available. It's like 15 seasons altogether.
Makes good sense,
from our
Rocky.
Public library system here in Grand Rapids, and Hartford being a bigger town. Hopefully, you'll have good luck with the future seasons there, but I did check the first two seasons, and they are available.
Oh, yeah. Hartford's library systems is platinum level. I mean, we pay Hartford twice as much as Bridgeport folks and the biggest cities in the country, in the state here. Hartford, it's like a $6 million budget for just our Hartford library system alone. Big time.
So
we
you
don't,
may as well tap in.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Money left.
Those things are probably still mint in box. Thanks, Rocky.
Yep. Okay, so that's the sum total of my contribution for today.
We appreciate
it. Thank you so much for your program.
Yeah, thanks for listening out there.
Okay.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah, good point. We like to look at the low-tech options. So there was a caller trying to figure out how to stream, you know, a certain series. And Rocky's right. Just find it at your local library. All right, let's go on to Karen in Windsor next. Hey, Karen.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Doing fine. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for taking my call.
Oh, our pleasure.
I have questions about Microsoft Office products. I have a HP laptop. It's about 5 years old. It's got a Win 7 operating system.
Yeah.
When I purchased the laptop, I paid $99 for a 2010 version of Microsoft Office.
Sure.
And a couple of years later, and I was quite happy with it.
Yeah.
A couple of years later, my employer was about to roll out 2013, and we were offered a $10 purchase price for the 2013 Office products.
Wow, nice.
Yeah.
Are you in education?
Well, it was, of course, so we could play with it at home, so we wouldn't have to learn it at work, which was fine. But I don't really compute at home, so I don't need the 2013 version.
Right.
What happens, though, is when I pull up any Microsoft, and I only use Word and Excel, frankly, but if I try to pull up any of those, it defaults to the 2013 version, which uses the cloud, and I don't like that. So I want to use the 2010 version. Mostly I use it for Excel, and that's where my budget is. So is there a way I can delete the 2013 version without and have the system default back to 2010 when I open any Microsoft Office product?
Right. So basically what's happening is you're double-clicking on the Excel document, and it's automatically calling 2013. Right?
Yes, and I don't want it to.
So do it the other way around. You could always do that. You can bring up the program first, right? Bring up the Office program you're going to use, the tool you want to utilize, and then open the app, then open the file. And that should work.
It works with Excel, but it does not work with Word.
It would mean that they wrote the document in a
they're not compatible?
They wrote it in a non-compatible way on purpose. Yeah. You could tell your employer to stop doing that. What most employers in our small business clients, many of them don't have a homogeneous Office suite because it's ridiculously expensive to try to do that. Trying to keep up the latest and greatest, and even paying for 365 is quite expensive when you do the math. So many of them will find that, you know, you get some folks on Office 2010, some folks on 2013, some folks in 2016, but they're all Word documents. Yeah. And all those versions of Office allow you to save the document in a compatibility mode, meaning that it can save it in a way that all the other versions can read it for the most part. If they've done some sort of specialty formatting that was introduced in 2016 that wasn't in 2010, maybe you'll lose that. But we would contend a Word document's a Word document's a Word document. How much more innovation could they have possibly packed in to these newer versions? So
I agree with that, but this is on my home laptop. It's not in my
But they're sending you a document from work created on a different version of Office is your problem, correct?
No, it's when I can't actually access my employer prohibits any files to be sent to either received or sent out to of their network by a non.
That's fine. That's probably a good policy.
This is just for my home computer. So if I have any documents in Word, which I try to stay away from because I just don't care for that product, everything defaults to the 2013. And
that's when you open it directly, though, right?
Well, even if I can open Excel and choose my 2010 created documents.
Right.
But for some reason, if I open Word and then try to open a document, it still defaults to 2013 and the cloud.
It reopens another application for you?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, when you installed your Office 2013 upgrade, did you upgrade or did you install it in such a way? Usually it'll ask you if you want to install it to a separate location so you can run both side by side. If you don't tell it to run side by side, if you just click next, 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 it's going to upgrade your application and kind of overwrite, get rid of the older version.
I might have done that. And if I look at all programs, I've got Microsoft Office of 2010 and 2013 listed. I mean, they look separate.
They're separate? Okay.
So if you go down into Program Files under the Microsoft Office folders in there, you're going to find different years. They'll have like
2010
for the different versions. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
And you can see if that's in there. And then what you can do is you could click on the file and click Open With and navigate to the 2010 version versus the 2013 version.
Okay.
Try to force it. Or you can try uninstalling it. You can go to the...
I wouldn't uninstall it because then you got to reactivate it. What I would do is
good point.
I would click on it and choose Repair.
Wow.
And that would do what?
You should be able to repair your Office installation. Typically, you can do that by opening an application in 2010.
But you think it's broken?
It could be. It could be that the DLLs are pointing to the new version rather than the old version or the registry. And the repair of 2010, Office 2010, would repair those registry pointers.
And again, if the file is a pure 2013 version only, your 2010 may not be able to open it.
Yeah. Again, I would choose to live without it because, So if I delete the 2013 version, then I could be impacting
the 2010. Yeah,
the 2010.
You might, depending on how it was upgraded, we don't want you to affect your registration.
That's very unfriendly of Microsoft.
Well, you know, they're looking out for you.
Yes. I guess they are.
I am finding it odd, though, that when you open within the tool, when you're in 2010 Word and you open a file, it still then reopens a 2013 editor. That is quite discern. Yeah. I would not appreciate that either.
Yeah, and that's I have a thing about that. Just it's my laptop. Let me do what I want to do.
Yeah, let you open with. Yeah. Now, again, like Bob said, it could be a file association thing. So you could also go to your Explorer and change your file associations to say all doc files open with 2010. You could do that. I want to show, give her an explanation for that. Well, actually, you know what? We'll put a link up there for you on how to update your file associations, Karen.
Okay.
So you can force them to say, hey, whenever I open this extension, a doc or a docx, please open with and have it associated with the older office. And they may let it work for you. But, yeah, I mean, it's just Word, right? You just want to edit the silly document.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much. Oh,
you're welcome.
For the caller who had the question about a budget.
Yeah.
Personally, I use Excel, and they've got some templates out there if you search for them.
Yep.
But there's also a guy, he's a talk show host. His name is Dave Ramsey. He's got a budget plan out there, and I don't use it. I've never been on his website, but I hear it's quite good. And if you just Google Dave Ramsey, you might find his budget.
Yep, Dave Ramsey, probably Clark Howard's got something too.
Yep.
But anything that's connected to your bank account would creep me out. How about you?
Yeah, not definitely don't do that.
All right, Karen. Thanks.
Thanks, guys.
Yep.
Bye.
Bye-bye. I mean, goodness. Connect it to your bank account to see what you're spending. They're not going to do anything. They're just going to check what you're buying. We're going to step out for a quick break. Dennis, hang on. We've got three lines open, 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. Feel free to get online. We're here till 11 o'clock. We'll be right back. We are back. This is Computer Talk with Tab. We're here until 11 o'clock. The lines are all jammed up again. So computer problems in Connecticut continue and across the country. Let's go back to your calls right away here. We've got Dennis in Watertown, been on the longest. Hey, Dennis, what's up?
Hi. Morning, guys. How
morning.
Are you?
Good. How are you?
My problem is a printer that won't print.
Oh, boy.
And apparently the reason it won't print is it's in an offline status, and it's defeated all my attempts to get it online, and I don't know what else to do.
All right. Well, some of the basic attempts would be to uninstall and reinstall the printer driver. Have you tried that?
No.
All right. That's the first attempt of any attempt that you should make, is to try to uninstall and reinstall that printer driver, because I'm guessing your printer has got a new IP address. Is it connected directly to your computer, or is it wireless?
It's wireless.
Yeah.
What kind of printer is it?
An HP 5520.
Okay, when you installed your original printer driver, I'm guessing it may have installed a utility that you might be able to find in your menu to go and rediscover whatever IP it's on.
Yeah.
So you could run that before you uninstall.
I do have the IP address number for the printer. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, did you get that from the printer, or is that what you had originally?
I got it from the printer.
Just now?
Well, not just now, but a while ago.
Are you sure it's the same one?
I could go check again if you have the time.
Well, we're here until 11. We can put you back on hold. The thing with these wireless printers, and that we've had these discussions with other folks before, is that what happens is you get a new IP address from your DHCP server, which is generally your router, and now you don't know where to find your printer anymore. And you need to tell, like Bob is saying, rediscover the printer, where it's located, and you have to use a secondary app that's part of the HP suite to go refine the printer so it can go tell the printer driver, hey, buddy, I'm over here. Or you uninstall the driver, reinstall it, and it'll auto-discover it that way.
I see.
So
I do have the IP address of you.
The current one?
Pardon me?
The current one?
Yes.
Okay, good. So if you know the current address, write it down. Don't need to tell me. And then you can go to the properties of that printer driver. If you right-click, you can go to the port settings that printer driver is set to and see if it's using the same IP address.
But it may, if it's an HP, it may have some obscure name that you really wouldn't identify, and you can't see the IP address in that. So what I would do is create a new port, a printer port on your computer.
Within the driver.
Yeah, and then enter that IP address into the new port and check that as the default port.
Right, for now. Okay. It's going to change again on you, Dennis. So the bigger question is, does other folks use this printer besides you?
No.
Just you. Is it within proximity of your computer? Meaning, is it within 6 feet?
It's maybe a little more than 6 feet, eight to ten probably.
Okay. You could decide to end this problem once and for all and just get a USB printer cable that's within that distance and plug it into your computer. I'll guarantee you your problems will go away forever with this issue.
Okay.
Or?
I have a laptop. Will that work with a laptop too?
Yes, sir. Yeah, in a laptop, you can move closer to the printer if you had to.
Yeah.
So, yes, just plug it right into your laptop and the printer, the problem is solved. Or you have to do a little work designating an IP address on your DHCP server, which is probably within your router, that'll separate and say, look, my I'm going to reserve these IP addresses 192.168.1.5 through 1.10 as available addresses that are only available for certain things. Then you go to your printer and fix its IP address at that setting so it doesn't receive an automated one. And that can, and then of course change your printer driver to know that address, and that'll take care of your problem as well. A lot more work involved in what I just described versus a simple cable.
Yeah.
Why print wirelessly if you can print wired? Wired always works.
Okay. If I decided to try and uninstall and reinstall a driver.
Yeah.
Do I just go to HP and download the proper driver?
You could do it that way because it wouldn't hurt to get to the latest driver at the same time while you're doing this, sure. And then it should detect its printer out there. It should say, oh, I see a printer over here at 192 yada yada yada. Is this your printer? And you're going to say, yep. And it should do it. But again, this thing can change on you in a week or a month or in whatever because it's getting a random IP address.
I see.
So...
okay, so the cable is the sure way.
Yes, sir.
Everything else is a lot of work.
Yes, it is. Either all these ways work, but the cable one always works. Generally, always.
They're just not all dependable.
Right. All right, Dennis.
Okay. All right. Thanks for the help.
You got it, sir. Good luck.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. All right, Dennis will be printing again before he knows it. We'll be right back after these words.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.